together like this and leading the congregation in worship. I'm thankful for the wonderful invitation given by the elders, and the church is truly blessed with the elders that you have and their wives. It is also great to have you all supporting our work, and I've had ties given to me in bags. I've had ties on my door when I've left, hanging on the door of my car. And I appreciate all of you men doing your little spring cleaning and giving me some ties. And it's truly going to bless a lot of people. I want to thank the. I was told tonight that the church is going to help us in a special way also towards our purchasing of Bibles and to a water well, and I want to thank you all so much for that, and we will try to bring some pictures back and show you the blessings that have come from that. The U.S., I've traveled a lot, and the U.S. is still by far the greatest nation on earth. We are exceptional. I remember when I got my green card, and then after my green card, I had went through the process and became an American citizen. When I was studying the history of the country, I was quite taken back by it. I never studied. I studied a little American history, but not much when I was growing up in Africa. And so to study, to prepare, to take the test to become a citizen was quite a blessing to my life. And when I went and took the test, I can still see that immigration officer. He kind of looked at me like, you know, we really don't need you. We got plenty of people. But then after I took the test and came back for the ceremony to recognize all of us as citizens, he was there, and he just grabbed me and hugged me, and there was probably about 200 of us that said the Pledge of Allegiance for the first time as citizens at the Memphis Peabody, and I got to see the Ducks as well. But that was really a special moment. And from all those years, I've been a citizen a long time. All those years, I have been so thankful that I am. When I look at America, the infrastructure is second to none. They talk about the rise of China, and when it comes to infrastructure, even though we are talking about rebuilding our infrastructure, but I mean, there is no country that compares to us as far as our infrastructure. The wealth of our nation. Do you know that the economy of California is larger than the economy of the country of France? Our unemployment right now is 4.1%. Where I work in Southern Africa, employment ranges from 27% to almost 90% in some countries. Open arms that we have given to refugees. The help that neighbors give in America to their neighbors. When I think about what happened in Houston and then in Florida and then in Puerto Rico, and just think our nation just responds. You know, we don't give up and say, oh, no, not again. I mean, we just go at it, you know. The equality of our laws second to none. The welcoming of legal immigrants like myself, you know, is just amazing. And in this country today, if you are willing to work hard, there is no reason why you can't be a success. I'm not talking about being a millionaire or billionaire, but if you are willing to work hard, this country will reward you. The immense natural resources that we have. Now I've said all this to say this, that we are a blessed nation and we are the wealthiest by far. And on an average, you know, citizens here have far more than others in anywhere in the world. In fact, I've had several Africans say to me, I just wish I could come to America and live in poverty. You know, that's how we are. But I think sometimes being independent and possessing material possessions and wealth has also a downside to it, because there is no lasting satisfaction with that. And really, if I had to give you the title of my sermon tonight, the whole title would be that the American dream is meaningless without Jesus. We prayed You think of the cycle that some families go through. We you know, I prayed for a car, and I have a car, and I have a house, and I have a spouse, and you know, I've got all these things. And then what's the next thing we look? Boy, you know, if I think I'd be happier if I just had that bigger house, or if I could just get a new car. And for some people, maybe if I could just get another spouse. You know, it's where the cycle goes without God. Or if I just had that new iPhone that just came out, you know. Remember, well, some of us that like video games, remember the Nintendo one that you might have got one Christmas that had the games of the Mario Brothers and RBI Baseball and Techno Bowl, and you played those games until it was almost burning, and then you had to blow into them, you know, blow about 10 times to get it back in and then get it going, and you got tired of that. But then came Super Nintendo, and after playing that for a while, you got tired of that, but here comes PlayStation. You know, the next thing. How many people stand in line for the new Star Wars? And they did it 2 years before and 2 years before. Nothing ultimately satisfies. We're always looking at the new horizon for something new. And like a scientist or philosopher, we experiment and we experiment. And Solomon says to us, and we look at Ecclesiastes and focus on chapter 2. Solomon says to us, listen, I tried it all. I know about that. What you all are doing in America, let me tell you, I tried that a long time ago. Let me just explain to you what I tried. He said, the first thing I did is I turned to pleasure. Well, it wasn't first. It was probably he tried everything else, and then he came to pleasure. Thought pleasure is the way it must go. You know, if I can live a hedonistic lifestyle, as many propose in our lifestyle in our world today, and even in our country, eat, drink, and be merry, you know. Tim Keller points out that it is not until Solomon already concluded, you know, that all the other things he tried, but maybe pleasure was the way to go. Solomon's attitude is like that. I don't know if you've heard that Tim McGraw song where the guy gets a bad diagnosis and then he wants to do all these crazy things like skydiving and climbing and mountain climbing and riding a bull and all of that, you know. Maybe if I do all of these wild and crazy things, you know, maybe that'll bring me my happiness. Solomon's goal is to determine if pleasure provides a solid foundation for life. It should be the driving force. Maybe that's the driving force of giving me satisfaction here on earth. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2 verse 1, he said, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. Let me tell you, he had epic parties. If you will read him, some of his parties had 20,000 people there. And all the beef, the filet mignon, and everything was there. It was just unbelievable what he had. And he said, you know what, I tried all that and it really didn't satisfy me, and so I decided maybe I'll go to comedy. Imagine if I had a comedy store 24/7. Maybe that's the way to go. He said, I said in my heart, Ecclesiastes 2 verse 1 and 2, come now, I will test you with mirth. And I said, of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it really accomplish? You see, there's nothing wrong with laughing and funny movies. And, you know, the big thing now is go to funny little clips, YouTube clips and all of that. But when everything's said and done, is that what gives us our basis to really live our lives and give us complete purpose? No, it's just a passing fad. I mean, you can quote from Tommy Boy and Dumber and Dumber, and all those things might be little funny quips, but it's not going to give you a foundation to living. And Solomon, although those movies weren't around then, is saying the exact same thing. He leaves comedy store and he goes to the bar. And he writes about the bar. In fact, look at these words in Proverbs. It is not for kings to drink wine and not for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert justice of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing. Let drink forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. The Bible condemns drunkenness and says that's not the way to go. I was just looking at the CDC, and there's 88,000 deaths annually attributed to excess alcohol use in our nation. Every day, 30 people in the U.S. die in major motor vehicle crashes that involved people that are drinking alcohol and are becoming paired. That's every single day, 30 people. The CDC tells us there's long-term physical damage. We know that women who binge drink are more likely to have unprotected sex and the rapes that come with that. This is from the CDC. I won't read all of them, but I will read you the last two. It says that approximately 7,000 children in the U.S. under the age of 16 take their first drink every day. And out of those children, 17% of the men are going to have alcoholic problems in the years to come, and 8% of the women are going to. Number 10, teen alcohol kills 4,700 teens each year. That's more than all illegal drugs combined. And Solomon said, I tried that. Doesn't give you anything worth living for. And then he changed gears. And he did some things that were, although material, but benefited people. He went to building houses. In Ecclesiastes 2:4, he says, I made my works great and I built myself houses. And he built God's temple. You know, David wasn't allowed to do that, but Solomon did that, and he built houses for his wives. Now, let me tell you, that was some serious building when you read that he had 700 wives. That's some serious building right there. He built entire cities. He indulged in the best of architecture and agriculture and engineering. He constructed an irrigation system that you can even see today, all these pools that watered the orchards that he had. And he had mangoes and papayas and peaches, peach trees. And I mean, he had the whole gamut. He tried to get back to paradise is really what he tried to do, didn't he? He wanted to maybe duplicate the Garden of Eden. You can't go back there. Man's sinful. You can't do that anymore. I just wanted to share this with you before I move on. I want to share with you his wealth. He had tribute money given to him by all the nations that he conquered. They would give him money. When the Queen of Sheba came and visited him to find out about how accomplished he was and how wise he was, when she left him 9,000 pounds of gold, besides rubies, besides other things. 9,000 pounds of gold. He had heavy taxation. You might not know that about Solomon. When one of his sons came to power and the kingdoms divided, some of the people went to him as the new king and said, don't tax us like your father. And Rehoboam did worse than his father. All the cups that they drank of were solid gold, and all the utensils were solid gold. And what exactly was Solomon's net worth? Well, counting all of his possessions and material and the money that was coming in all the time, they say he was worth about $100 billion. Bill Gates is worth about $40 billion, although I think Bezos might be worth more than Solomon now. But $100 billion what he was worth. And what was his conclusion? After indulging in all kinds of sexual adventure as well, he said, here is the final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is the duty and the fulfillment of every person. You know what makes the American dream great? Is when we follow Jesus Christ. And with following Jesus Christ, we are given purpose to our lives, and therefore all the resources that we get, we can avenue towards glorifying people. I've had more than one person tell me since I have been here, you know, well, we're going to help us, but we're also going to. One person said, "Listen, I'm doing well, so I can help people that are needy around this community or in places where they have helped us. Now it's my turn to help them." And that all comes from a heart that's committed to Jesus Christ. There is a woman standing, and I'm just imagining this, but there is a woman standing there that, when Solomon said, fear God and keep his commandments, she says, that's exactly right, and I agree with him. If she was there. She is from the Bible. And her name is Rahab. And while Solomon was right at the top when it came to the world, she was right at the bottom. And yet both of them agree that the bottom line is fear God and keep His commandments. He's a king. He's the most powerful ruler. People come and they want to see His, quote, majesty. She's a prostitute. And she says, I want you to know you give your life to God and you will be surprised what's going to happen. She says, I was surprised when I heard the story of God parting the Red Sea. She said, I'm from the city of Jericho, but we heard this. We heard what was happening. We heard that the Israelites, the children of God, passed on dry land, and that when the Egyptian soldiers followed, they were destroyed, the whole army. I was surprised when I heard the powerful Amorite king had been destroyed. We who live in Jericho, we traded with Sihon and Og. We knew those people. We knew how powerful they were. We were, if she was here today, she'd probably tell us, we were actually shocked that there was this people called the Israelites that destroyed them. I was surprised when the spies appeared at my doorstep. I was shocked when I realized that they were Israelites. I had been hearing about them and they were at my doorstep. And they said to me that I took care of them. I hid them. And when the leaders of the city of Jericho wanted to find out where they had gone, I diverted them a different way so those men could escape. And they told me, your household will be saved because you helped us. If you will let that red scarlet thread out of your window, that scarf, when we see it, we will save your place. I was surprised when the Israelites kept their promise to spare me and my family. Everybody in the city didn't think that city could ever be conquered. Nobody's going to take down these walls. And I knew that that was going to happen. And on that seventh day, those walls came tumbling down and they kept their word. I told my parents and my family, I said, you need to get into my house. And they did. But the others did not believe that. And we were all saved on that seventh day. I was surprised to be included in the bloodline of Jesus Christ. A former prostitute was considered, quote, good enough to be able to be in the lineage of Jesus Christ. I am the great-grandmother, 28 generations removed of Jesus, the Messiah. God's the master of surprises and not boredom. And even when we grow up out of our adult years, if we are engulfed by materialism, we just go from small toys to bigger toys, but never satisfied. I'm bored. And I guess when you follow Jesus Christ, He deals maybe not so much in boredom, but in surprises. One person put it this way, this is the way I define a God surprise, is unexpected and unexplainable. Disrupts the status quo, turns the ordinary into the spectacular, shows how much bigger God is than what you have known or seen, changes your expectations and your destiny, leaves no room for doubt. That's God. And Solomon and Rahab agree together that whether you're at the bottom or you're at the top, the answer is you want to have a wholesome life when it comes to accepting Jesus Christ. And so they leave us with three points that I just want to share with you, and then the lesson is yours. Both of them share this with us. Number one, God invites you to be a part of His story. It's not doing it my way, as Frank Sinatra sang so many years ago, but God invites us to be part of His story. Every person's life is a story with potential and drama and humor and achievements. And God says, come and bring the talents I gave you and do it with me. Be added to the body of Christ and be a part of His church, but not just a part that comes on a Sunday morning, but that is a vital part of the activity of the church. God is extending that to you today. Here's another lesson. God wants to surprise us with His love, so adopt Him. Rahab would tell us, I didn't expect God to love me, but He did. He blew me away. On the island of Antigua, years ago when we were young missionaries, we were giving our tracts all through the community, and this lady, this was about 28 years ago, this young lady picked up one of the tracts on the street. It was in the red light district, and she at that time was an active prostitute, and she read the tract and it touched her heart, and she came to our gospel meeting. Her name is Dawn Richardson. She lives on the island now of Tortola, and she is a vital part of the church there. And Dawn couldn't believe that when we shared the gospel to her, that it was for her, that there was nothing that she had done that God couldn't forgive. God wants to surprise us with His love. His love is greater than anything we could ever do. And finally, God asks you to surprise others with your actions. Obey Him. Use your talents and abilities to make a difference. It's not always one-on-one with somebody and sharing them the gospel. It's a lot of times it's just doing good, especially in our society. You know, in Africa, we do a lot of good works in the sense, but a lot of it is one-on-one sharing the gospel. Maybe in our society, people aren't so readily want to hear the gospel per se, but they do love people that help them, and they are welcome to people that want to be friends with them, and through that provides us the avenue. So we should be looking at ways that we can connect with people. You know, help your neighbor build that backyard deck. You know, you never know what conversations come up or whatever else it is. My father, who is 91 years old now, and he still teaches Bible class every week. And years ago, my mom and dad were living on Sand Mountain, which is up there by Fort Payne, near the Georgia corner there. And there was two ladies that came to church there. They were members. They were sisters, and they had never married. And these two spinsters would be brought to church by their brother, who never obeyed the gospel, and he would just bring them to church, drop them off, and then when church was over, he'd be in the parking lot to pick them up. Well, my dad started visiting them, because they all three lived together, once a week. And after my dad had visited for some time, one of the spinsters died. And then over time, the second one died. And after that funeral, which was on a Thursday, and Dad would usually visit on a Wednesday, the Wednesday came, and my dad still went by and visited the brother. And as he opened the door, he said, Mr. Flynn, I didn't think you would be back after my sisters have both passed away. And while they would visit the three of them in the months and years before my father, they would get to talk about the church and, you know, just because of topics of what the church was about to do. And he'd be sitting and listening. And Dad said that Sunday, he came forward and he asked Dad if he would study with him a little more. And then he obeyed the gospel. But he said it was what caused the change was Norman. You showed concern for me even though my sisters were gone. So we embrace the love of God. We have this life that's fulfilling. Now what are we going to do? Because we've got a choice. We can just sit and embrace it, or we can use our talents and abilities to make a difference in this world. For as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ, and we have given you that salvation, that invitation. And God continues to invite us to come to Him and to rededicate our lives if we need to. Won't you come as we stand and sing?